So I'm the campaign manager for Adam Kopesh, and we're seeking the nomination for the President of the United States within the Libertarian Party. He's running on the platform of the peaceful, orderly, and responsible dissolution of the entire federal government, leaving us with like 50 independent states and up to 562 sovereign native nations. The federal government's where democracy goes to die, really. Both sides of the political aisle, the red team versus the blue team, they have a vision for how they want to live their lives, and then they try to push it on other people. So we have a tour bus, and right on the front it says, "America is too good for this government."
I'm proud to share with you Tetragen, which helps you transition to a healthier, happier, and thinner you without cravings or side effects. Our metabolic hormones are the underlying problem that doom every diet and exercise program to fail. They control our metabolism, cravings, how much we eat to feel satiated, blood sugar levels, and even our energy levels. Tetragen is formulated with four clinically proven patented ingredients that help rebalance your metabolic hormones in roughly 15 to 20 days, depending on the amount of weight you want to lose. Once your metabolic hormones are rebalanced, you'll be on the path to long-term, sustainable weight loss because Tetragen is the first in the world which is scientifically formulated with four clinically proven and patented active ingredients to help you reach your targeted weight in two distinct phases. Phase one, we balance your metabolic hormones, and phase two, accelerate fat loss. The best part is that Tetragen comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee. So what do you have to lose besides weight? Learn more with the link below. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have a really interesting person coming to the show. His name is Elijah Ghisarelli. And he is the campaign manager for Adam Kokesh, who is a presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party. And Elijah is really interesting in his own right. He was in the military, and he actually got out of the military as a sergeant after being promoted 5 times. Every year he was promoted, which is really rare in the Army. And he also was a French and Arabic translator, and he worked with the NSA doing counterterrorism operations. And then he just got out. The whole military just wasn't his cup of tea, which isn't surprising if he's now a campaign manager for someone in the Libertarian Party. But Adam Kokesh's platform, as I've been learning, we've been in China together. And we took a trip. We were on a delegation learning all sorts of things about China. And we did a Silk Road tour. We went with Cynthia McKinney and a lot of other folks who are really active and activists and very, very broad range of ideas from all different sides of the political spectrum. And he was somebody that I got to talk to a lot. And I learned about their platform, and it seems pretty radical, but it's interesting for sure. And it's important that we look at all these different ideas. You know, his candidate has raised 10 times more than any other candidate in the Libertarian Party. So they are really the front runner at this point to getting the nomination. While it may be extremely hard to actually be elected for president in the United States, because we have a two-party controlled system, as everyone probably listens to this program knows, but a party like that can really, like the Libertarian Party, can really affect the narrative in this country. And their platform is the complete dissolution of the United States federal government. They want to send it through bankruptcy and create 50 or so independent country states and have a different setup for the United States. And while this seems really extreme, their reasonings actually make some sense here. And so many people are so fed up with the corruption of our federal government and the debt and realize that there needs to be something new that we put in place, something that can really solve some of our problems. And with everything that we're hearing, it's interesting and good to start hearing different solutions and to start moving in directions to solve our very serious very infrastructure deep foundational problems that we have. The Libertarian Party is last election, they got 3.5% of the votes. You know, I don't trust the election. I think there's very likely a lot of fraud going on. And it'll be very difficult for the Libertarian Party to reach the 5% that's necessary to get on the ballot across the whole country unless this fraud gets lifted. However, if they can really affect the narrative, then that too will make a big change. And we know they have in the past affected the narrative quite a bit. So this is a very interesting conversation. And then the other thing is he stays after and we discuss what we witnessed in China. And that's for my Patreon. So if you want to join Patreon, you can get there by patreon.com/Sarah Westall. And I want to thank you so much, my patrons that support this independent journalist. Without you, it makes it a lot more difficult to keep this independent news going. So really thank you. I count on that every month. And of course, my sponsors, that too is just, I'm so thankful for everyone that I'm working with. I have so many great people. There's so many people that believe in independent journalism in this time where we don't know who to believe. All this fake news and fake media that's controlled and spun, we don't know who to believe. So we desperately need these voices out there, this independent people doing work, talking to people and gathering what's really going on the ground. So thank you so much for supporting a program. And of course, if you want any of the products that I have to start the new year, to really get you going on meeting your goals, whether it's weight loss or, you know, getting on the C60 so that you can really build up your immunities or lengthen your telomeres, go to my shop at sarahwestall.com/shop. But anyways, let's get into this amazing interview with Elijah Ghisarelli. Hi, Elijah. Welcome to the show.
Oh, glad to be on.
We are in China together, and you are amazing. You are the campaign manager for one of the front runners in the Libertarian Party. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So I'm the campaign manager for Adam Kokesh, and we're seeking the nomination for the President of the United States within the Libertarian Party. So the nomination process within the Libertarian Party is quite a bit different from the Republicans and the Democrats. You know, we don't get as much, media attention about it, and there's no, like, big primary events, no Super Tuesday or anything like that. The way it works is, like, each state has its own state convention. If you would like to be a delegate to the national convention, you go to your state convention, you get selected. You go to the national convention, and only the people that attend the national convention in Austin next May get to choose our nominee for president.
So your candidate is probably the front runner, right?
We've raised the most money by far. Up until recently, we had raised 10 times as much as all the other candidates combined. So we should probably be considered the front runner. I think it wouldn't be too bold of me to say that.
Okay. Well, what I want to ask you about is, and I'm going to have Adam on, which I'm excited about, so I want to stay more to what the Libertarian Party in general is and some of the interesting things that I learned on this trip from you. Can you talk about what the Libertarian, a lot of my listeners already know, but tell us what the Libertarian Party is, and then I want to talk about some of these interesting facets, these other groups that are attached to the Libertarian Party.
Yeah, of course. So the Libertarian Party was formed back in, I think, 1971, technically, but the first presidential election was 1972. It's fundamentally different from what we like to call the old parties, the Republicans and Democrats. Because we base our entire platform off of, like, principles, right? So we call ourselves the Party of Principle. There was actually a great article in the Boston Globe recently. Former governor of Rhode Island and former U.S. Senator Lincoln Chafee had switched his party affiliation to the Libertarian Party. And he wrote an article in the Boston Globe that was why I changed to the Libertarian Party, and kind of, like, explains how he went through the party's platform and he agreed with almost the whole thing. And And it's just like when you actually read the platform, like if you ask the average Democrat or Republican what's within their party's platform, they probably couldn't even produce one plank, you know. But if you ask the average libertarian, they'll tell you how there's a comma where there shouldn't be. Like, they'll be like very upset about that comma. It's a joke that we talk about all the time. And you know, like libertarians care about the platform. Like, that is the party. So you can read the platform at lp.org/platform. It's a really fantastic read, very interesting.
What would you say are the biggest things that are different?
Well, what's really cool is in the preamble of the platform, the Libertarian Party says, like, you know, it says, like, look, we're about to say our policy positions, right? But then it says, but don't get confused. These policy positions, I'm summarizing here. It says, don't get confused. These policy positions are not our goal. Our goal is nothing more nor less than a world set free in our lifetime, right? And so it's really just kind of a different take, right? And you can kind of see that through just kind of the actions of the party, right? Like, we will take bold stances, even if they're not, you know, politically expedient, right? Since 1972, you know, we've been talking about legalizing marijuana and, in fact, legalizing meth and all other drugs, right? That wasn't politically expedient at the time. But now in 2020, it's 2020 now. Happy New Year. And now in 2020, you know, we're seeing marijuana being legalized across the United States and nobody's dying or anything crazy, right?
But now legalizing crack cocaine or something. Okay, now why would that be? Give us the philosophy behind why that would be.
Exactly.
Because, you know.
Yeah. So this is, I'm going to kind of take a step back here. So usually when I talk to people, like when I tell people I'm a libertarian, if people do know what the Libertarian Party is, they'll say, like, oh, like Gary Johnson, right? And it's like, yes, Gary Johnson was a member of the Libertarian Party. He was our presidential nominee, 2012, 2016. Fantastic guy. I've met him, talked to him in person. Love the guy. But philosophically, and this is the thing, is like libertarianism is much bigger than the Libertarian Party. The Libertarian Party probably only represents about 30% of libertarianism. Many libertarians, philosophical libertarians, don't even care too much for the party, right? So the problem is that, yes, Gary Johnson was a great member of the Libertarian Party, but he has never been a philosophical libertarian. So if you say, like, if I were to ask, like, a Democratic candidate today, like, should we legalize marijuana? I'll probably get a yes answer. And then somebody might say, well, that's a libertarian answer. And it's like, no. Because if you ask them, well, why should we legalize marijuana? They'll probably give you like a laundry list of reasons. You know, they'll say, well, if we legalize marijuana, you know, we could tax it and then use that money to build infrastructure. Or if we legalize marijuana, you know, it's safer than alcohol or cigarettes, or, you know, there's even possible medical uses. We might be able to cure cancer or other things, you know, all this stuff. And none of that is libertarian. If you ask a libertarian, a philosophical libertarian, why we should legalize marijuana, the only correct answer is because nobody but you should be able to tell you what you should put in your own body, right? Libertarianism is this idea that you should be the ultimate decision maker of your own life. And if somebody else is trying to usurp that power from you, it's just an unethical situation. They're being authoritarian, which is the opposite of libertarian, and we abhor that.
Oh, that's a great answer. Okay, so there's other facets of the Libertarian Party that I thought was absolutely unique. You have, or interesting, to say the least. You have a facet that it call themselves, let me, if I'm wrong, socialist, anarchists.
No, they don't call themselves that. They call themselves LibSox for short, but Libertarian Socialists.
Okay, how can you
seems oxymoronical, in a
to
way.
To say the least.
Yeah. But because, like, when you think of socialism, you think of state socialism, which is, like, the government controls everything. When you think of libertarianism, you think of Ron Swanson, like, you know, here's my permit, I do what I want, right?
So yeah, the opposite.
Yeah. So, but so what I've noticed, and I don't know if it's in their official platform, but what I've noticed from the libertarian socialists is that they all seem to be anarchists. They don't believe that the government should exist at all. I have had talks with many of them, and they believe that Marx's writing, like, the end goal was a stateless society. Where and so typically libertarians as a whole, like the non-libertarian socialists, tend to be a little combative with the libertarian socialists for, you know, several reasons. But on principle, they say, well, they're not libertarians at all. And I feel like a lot of this is from like a miscommunication, right? So in order to join the Libertarian Party, you have to do a pledge. It's called the Non-Aggression Principle Pledge, right? The NAP. And it says that I will not use force or coercion to attain my political or social goals. That's all it says, right? And it's basically like the bottom line principle of the Libertarian Party. And all of the libertarian socialists have used this. So when you think of like a socialist revolution, you think of, you know, the Great Leap Forward, where, you know, millions of people were killed. You think of all these, the Bolshevik Revolution, where millions of people were killed. You think of all these things. The libertarian socialists say that they would never do such a thing, you know, that they don't believe in that. So you kind of got to take people at their word. And even if it can be a little confusing, you kind of just got to, you know, I don't know, in order to work with people, you have to kind of...
It's weird.
Yeah, it is a little weird.
It's weird. Let's just call it weird. But yeah. I guess it kind of makes sense if you think that the end goal is a stateless thing, but then it's still a controlled stateless voluntary.
Yeah, well, not really. So they're, from what I gather, I'm not a libertarian socialist, so it's hard to speak on, you know, other people's beliefs. But from what I gather, the real crux of their argument comes down to what equals justly acquired property, right? And the proper use of property, right? So, for instance, this is getting really nerdy, so forgive me. But general property rights, like the current property rights paradigm that we run most of society under, at least Western society, is a Lockean model from John Locke. And it's this idea that if you mix your labor with the soil, then it becomes yours. So like, if there's like a tree, it's just in the middle of the woods, nobody owns the tree. But if I go and I chop down the tree and I turn it into a table, that's my table, you know, because I spent my life force to create that table, right? And so it wouldn't have existed without my life force being put into it. So now it's mine, right? They contend that, like, you know, you can't own, like, so now when we have property rights, right? So you're like, well, I bought my house, right? So I used my life force to gather these riches, and then I traded those riches for this property. So it's mine, right? Then they're like, well, how did that person come to own that land? That land has always been there. It's been on earth since forever. They didn't create that land. So you can't own that land. That's everybody's land.
So you can own the house, but not the land.
Exactly. Like, that's the kind of things. Like,
and so you kind of, who do you lease it from? Yeah. You just don't lease it from, there's no lease. They're just.
As wide ranging as of philosophical thought in the Libertarian Party, the libertarian socialists also have a wide range. They argue amongst themselves about different principles,
sure.
Right? So some people believe even if you own something, if you're not actively using it, it's up for fair game, you know? But then they'll be like, no, we're talking about like rental properties, not your toothbrush. And it's like, but what about your travel toothbrush? You know, like it gets really detailed and okay. Yeah, it's well, very nerdy conversation.
Oh, you know, geez. Like it gets really detailed and kind of dumb. Okay. Well,
it's never
going to affect reality. So, but they're a small group, right?
Yeah, they're a rather small group, yes.
But it's also interesting. This is just interesting, so I wanted to talk about it. Because we do got to get back to the what you guys are really doing. But some of those members are Antifa.
Oh, yeah, almost all of them, actually, I would say. There's a segment. It's kind of strange because a lot of people say, well, if you're libertarian, you have to be anti-fascist, right? And it's like, well, yeah, that's a pretty good argument. But it's like, I'm against Antifa because I am anti-fascist.
Yeah, because they kind of are fascists in their activities.
Yeah, so again, in order to become a libertarian, you have to sign a pledge that says that you will not use violence or coercion to attain, you know, social or political goals. And we've seen Antifa, that's what Antifa does. It's almost what defines Antifa. So yes. I'm a little troubled by libertarians claiming to be part of Antifa or whatever.
It's weird.
It is a little weird.
It doesn't fit the description.
Now, with that said, I've been told, and I haven't verified this for myself, but the Antifa of New Hampshire, for instance, has been basically taken over by very peaceful people that won't hit people. That's what I've been told by people. I haven't verified that or anything, but I have been told that there is an effort to make Antifa more peaceful. So.
Well, that's good, actually. I mean, if they can just peacefully protest, it's one thing. It's when they're being violent.
Yeah, and I've been surrounded by Antifa myself, like, trying to support the position. But because I was wearing a shirt that said voluntarist, they assumed that was, like, some sort of hateful thing. It was really weird.
And then they treated you bad?
Yeah, I was surrounded by people in masks, and they were saying some pretty aggressive things. It was an intimidating situation.
Okay, yeah, on this trip I've heard some interesting stories about Antifa and the people's run-ins with them. Let's talk about your platform a bit and how you guys are structured and what you're going to do. And I know Adam is going to want to talk about this in more detail, but as a campaign manager, your job is to try to get him elected, so you're going to want to talk a little bit about...
Oh, yeah, of course. So it's actually really exciting. So I'll actually tell you how I got involved. So I've known about Adam since, Adam Kokesh since, like, I don't know, maybe 2011 or so. And he had a show on RT America called Adam Versus the Man. I think that's probably where, like, I first saw him, maybe before that. He was really active in Ron Paul's campaign for presidency in 2012. And so, you know, I've kind of followed him, like, you know, kind of on social media ever since then. And a couple of years ago, he started going around like saying like Kokesh for not president. And I was like, well, that's weird, you know? And then he was like, I identify as like, I'm a radical. Like, I don't believe that, you know, I'm a voluntarist. I don't believe that the government as we define government today should exist. Right. And Adam's a radical and that's cool. We get along in that aspect, but I'm kind of like a very pragmatic person. You know, I think if you're too radical to people's faces, it kind of turns them off, you know? So I like...
It does a bit. Yeah. Or it's divisive, because if they don't agree with 100% of you and you're radical about it, then it turns them off, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So like my idea is like the Libertarian Party is kind of like the pragmatic face of libertarianism, where you don't have to be... I don't want radicals out front, you know? I wanted like, you know, Gary Johnson's out front, people that just kind of... got the ideas out there in a palatable way, right? And so Adam was on tour and I saw this and he was stopping by in Rhode Island where I live. And I was like, well, yeah, he's going to explain his campaign and I'm going to tell him why it's stupid. You know, like that was really my plan, right? So I go down there and I tell him, like, I'm like, look, I think this is a really bad idea. Like this isn't going to work, one, because people aren't going to elect a radical, and two, like, just by running, you're going to be turning people off of libertarianism because you're like down the rabbit hole. They haven't even seen the top of it. You know, like, it's just going to be shock. And then he started explaining his plan for the general election and how we can use this platform. And I'll tell you the platform. He's running on the platform of the peaceful, orderly, and responsible dissolution of the entire federal government. Right. So leaving us with like 50 independent states and up to 562 sovereign native nations, right? So it's like...
This is pretty radical.
Yeah, it's radical on its face. But then when like the things that we have to like the messaging elements that we have, it allows us to talk to anybody on the political spectrum very easy. And I use this all the time. So we have a tour bus and right on the front, it says, America is too good for this government, right? And it talks about the platform of getting rid of the government on like the side of the tour bus. And I can pull in, I've driven it around the country. I can pull into a gas station. And it could be in like, I don't know, in the middle of the woods in West Virginia, or it could be in like downtown Philadelphia. And the reactions are pretty much the same. People come out and they're like, is this guy for real? Like, and they see the tour bus and it looks very real to them. You know? And then they're like, they start asking about it. And then they're like, you know what? I don't normally vote, but I'd vote for that. You know, and about 60% of Americans don't regularly vote. It's really crazy. So if we can pull enough people from that group of people, like the 60% of Americans that don't normally vote, they don't vote because they don't feel represented. And if we can just pull a portion of that, that's going to make a really bold statement. And it's going to change the political discourse in this country.
Well, now you aren't advocating necessarily to get rid of the United States. It's more to get rid of the government, have separate, separate countries, or how is that going to work?
I would call it all one country still, right? A lot of times, I think the discourse is we define a nation by its government. And I think that that's kind of, I think it's kind of dubious, right? If, you know, the United States goes to war with Iraq, it's not America versus Iraq. It's the United States government versus the Iraqi,
whatever, you know, they go to war with.
Yeah, whatever they call it, right? So it's not really, you know, the American people versus the Iraqi people. I would consider it still the United States will remain one nation, but the decision-making will be more localized. And we're running on this idea of localization because localization is the cure for polarization. And we can see in American discourse right now, it's so polarized, right? Everybody's at each other's throats. And that's because everybody's trying to, both sides of the political aisle, the red team versus the blue team, they have a vision for how they want to live their lives, and then they try to push it on other people, right? So like San Antonio is trying to write laws for San Francisco, right? And vice versa. It's like, look, I live right near Massachusetts, right? Mass Health is basically Obamacare, right? Now, Obamacare was incredibly unpopular and remains to this day as very unpopular nationwide. But I've literally never heard a Massachusetts resident complain about Mass Health because all the people there agree with each other. You know, they live in that area because that's their culture. Like that's.
But did their health care go up 3 times? The cost of their health care.
I mean, I don't know the numbers.
There could be different factors. Yeah. You know, there it might not be as screwed up.
That's fair. You know, that's fair.
Because I have a hard time believing that it was, if it was as screwed up as Obamacare, for people not to complain.
To be honestly, I think that you're giving the voting public a little bit too much credit. Like, because a lot of people aren't even in tune with the information, you know? So, for instance, last year in Massachusetts, the Congress voted to give themselves a 40% raise. 40%. They went from $100,000 a year to $140,000 a year. And nobody batted an eye. It was like it didn't even happen. It was like horrific. And nothing happened. You know, so it's, I think that, you know, Mass Health could be terrible, but it's just the rhetoric behind it. The people don't care. You know, that's their aesthetic. They want the idea that, you know, the government's going to be taking care of the healthcare industry. People that live in Massachusetts generally agree with that concept. And so who are we, like, living outside to disagree with them?
I agree with that. Yeah.
Massachusetts can't do that. They need their own self-determination. And so, but at the same time, who are people in Massachusetts to tell people in Texas, you're not allowed to have your gun in public? You know, like, people in Texas don't care. They walk around with guns in public all the time, you know? So this is kind of, we take our own aesthetic and then we try to push it on other people. And so localization solves that. So in Texas, they can have their guns in public, and in Massachusetts, they can have their socialized medical care, right? And everybody's happy about it. I don't see anything wrong with that.
And if you're not happy, then you move to another state. Exactly. As long as we stay within the United States.
It makes it more of a decision, a personal decision, you know? And I'm not saying that that means that any state government can do whatever terrible thing. You know, there's still room for political movements within state governments. State governments themselves could then become localized, you know?
And there's rules for, there's basic laws, like you can't murder, you can't go and attack another state, you can't, you have to have civilized laws.
Yeah. Yeah, federally there wouldn't be any laws at all.
Because, well, but we still have to obey the United Nations, the Law of Nations, you know, there's a treaties on how people behave with each other. You don't go attack another state.
Yeah.
You respect their right to be a sovereign nation.
I would say in 2020, you know, we've come so far away. Like nobody would be like, oh, Connecticut should invade Rhode Island. You know,
well,
it's like,
I know.
Yeah. You know, like it's.
But there's basic.
Yeah,
there's basic laws that you have to behave in order to be a civilized society. Like you can't murder people.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And you can't take away other people's rights of life. I mean, because as a libertarian, don't you have basic laws like that? You can't hurt others.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, your rights end where other people's rights begin.
Yeah, and so that all those things that I'm talking about would be in that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I wouldn't even think that, you know, there'd be much conflict between states as far as like any type of physical thing. Maybe like, I don't know.
We don't have a history of fighting with each other.
Exactly.
And if we stay as a unit, then it wouldn't.
Yeah. So one thing that we say on the campaign is we don't have to be united under one government to be united in American values. Right. And that's really what defines the people, right, is American values. And honestly, the federal government's pretty un-American if you think about it. Like, America was founded on this idea of self-determination and rugged individualism. And then we're like, let's get into this one size fits nobody system, you know, and then fight amongst each other. That's not what it's meant to be, you know.
Let's create laws that just work for, you know, a small, very small percentage and ignore what the populace really wants.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the federal government's where democracy goes to die, really. And you can see that very simply with marijuana legalization. So I think the statistic, and I might be a little bit off, but it's like 76% of the American population wants marijuana to be legalized. And yet, it isn't on a federal level. And you might say, well, it's legalized in certain states like Massachusetts now, California, Washington, Colorado. But it doesn't matter. I was with a friend. I don't really smoke. I'm not a smoker. When I'm a libertarian with long hair, people always assume, you know. But, you know, I was with a friend who is a smoker, and we were driving from California, where recreational use is legalized, into Arizona, right? And Arizona has medical marijuana is legal. And that friend lives in Arizona, and they have a medical marijuana card in Arizona. But because we were within 100 miles of the U.S.-Mexico border, we were stopped by Border Patrol, okay? And Border Patrol said that they could smell marijuana in the car. Now, we had marijuana in the car, but it was a very small amount, and it was in, like, two different containers. There's no way they could smell it. I believe they saw my long hair coming from a newly legalized California state, you know, and they assumed I was driving into California to buy some marijuana and come back, right? So they searched the vehicle, and we had it locked away or whatever. But the veteran I was with, that has the medical marijuana card, was like, listen, let's just say I have a little bit of marijuana in the car. He was like, I'm a veteran. I have PTSD. I have a medical marijuana card in the state of Arizona, which is the state we're in, and we're coming from California where recreational use is legal. Are you really going to bust my balls about this? And the Border Patrol agent was like, listen, I'm a federal agent. And yes, you might be in Arizona where it's legal, but you're also in the United States where it is illegal. And if we do find marijuana in the car, you will be prosecuted.
Wow. So the federal government had more power than the local governments at that point.
Yeah, yeah, that's so you're always in the United States. So dispensaries in California have been raided by the DEA. Yeah, and people have been put in prison, even though they have signs outside like we sell marijuana, you know, like this is something that happens, you know, like this is a very common practice. It's usually doesn't get a whole lot of media attention.
No, it doesn't get any.
But yeah, like the Obama administration was really bad with it, actually. They raided so many dispensaries in California and were arresting people for
doing what was legal in California.
What was legal in that state. Yeah, the federal government has the authority to do that.
Okay, so how do people learn more about you, learn more about your campaign and what your guys are doing?
Awesome. Yeah, you can go to kokeshforpresident.com. We also have another website. Adam wrote a book called Freedom, which is kind of the white paper for the campaign, and that you can get the free audiobook and a downloadable PDF on thefreedomline.com.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much for joining today.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
The scientists at Live Pet are hard at work solving our cancer epidemic. They have the most promising cancer trials going on now with pet clinics around the country that I have ever seen. You can see the promising cancer research and trials going on some of the past shows that I've done. The links are below. While working with C60 and other ingredients, these talented scientists developed a hair growth serum that really works. They sat on it for years. After all, cancer is their focus. But they now realize how much the profits from this product could really help their cancer research. So the C360 Hair Growth product was launched. C360 Hair Growth is specifically designed to revive your hair growth by targeting hair follicles and restarting your hair growth cycle. C60, the active ingredient in C360 Hair Growth, reactivates hair follicles that have stalled due to hereditary hair loss, physical conditions, or environmental factors that may affect follicle production. You will begin to see visible results using C360 Hair Growth within 3 to 6 weeks. Buy today knowing that your future hair growth will help fund very promising cancer research. See more at the link below.